Going Linux, episode 174, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
As usual, we hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 75,000 titles. If you are a regular listener, you already know that we have a special URL that lets you get a free audiobook from Audible when you sign up for a 14-day free trial. Whether you are a regular listener or a new listener, if you haven't signed up, the place to go to get your free audiobook and 14-day trial is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. There is currently no Audible player that runs natively in Linux, so before you sign up, please make sure that you can run the player under Wine or that you have a portable device like an Android or other smartphone that can run the Audible player. Again, that URL is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. Hey guys, before we get into our discussions, I actually have a promo from another podcast. Eric Nance has sent us a promo, and he sent us an email as well. I'm not going to read the entire email in detail because some of what he talks about in the email is covered in the promo. But the podcast is called the R Podcast. And if you recall, we spoke about R in a previous episode. It is
a pirate podcast.
R. No.
No.
No. It's not the R Podcast. It's the okay. R Podcast. And it is the letter R. And R is a statistical package for Linux and Mac and Windows. And it's open source and free. And Eric is recording an entire podcast on just one software package, and that is R.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's got several episodes, including a screencast, already up. So let's listen to his promo.
Are you tired of using a spreadsheet program to understand and visualize data? Are you looking for a statistical computing package without high license fees? Do you want to utilize state-of-the-art methods and visualizations from statisticians and scientists around the world? If so, you may be ready for R, a free and open-source statistical computing environment. I'm Eric Nance, the host of the R Podcast. The R Podcast is an internet audio program, a podcast, for users who want to use R to accomplish innovative data and statistical analyses. Whether you are new to statistical computing, or have experience with other statistical computing software, or just curious about R, the R Podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you tap into the power of R. Our goal is to provide practical explanations of utilizing both R's default capabilities and also additional tools and packages available that greatly enhance the experience of using R. The concepts discussed in the R podcast will be demonstrated with easy-to-understand R programming scripts available via GitHub. For topics that benefit visual demonstrations, we will also produce screencasts to accompany the audio podcast. In each episode, we will also discuss listener feedback and provide solutions to listener questions. Come join us and see what it's all about. Our website is r-podcast.org. Thanks for listening.
Thank thanks, Eric, first of all, for providing us that promo. Sounds like a very interesting podcast. I listened to episode one and took a quick look at the screencast. And I have to say that the format of that promo sounds very familiar.
Really? Except he needs a sidekick.
Yeah, I'm suspecting that he may have modeled that after our introduction.
A little bit, maybe. And
what is it that's the sincerest form of flattery?
There you go.
So thanks for letting us know about that, Eric. And I'm going to listen to a few more episodes. I'm not into statistics, but it seems pretty simple.
I'll check it out, too. Sounds interesting.
It does.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy it. We'll listen to that. Sounds good.
So what's going on, guys? It's been a while since I've been here.
Okay, first off, you let the inmates run the asylum.
You did a great job, guys. You really did.
Thanks.
So since you have been absent, why don't you tell us what you've been up to?
Oh, I was just taking a little vacation.
Did you get our approval for that?
Get what approval? Your approval?
Yeah, because you didn't invite us.
Ah, I see. Yes, well, no. And there's a reason I didn't tell you that I was going.
Well, after 2 weeks, the FBI finally got back to me and said, don't worry, he's on a cruise.
Exactly. Exactly right.
And I just want to let you know, Tom would not let me play with any of the knobs or dials in Studio West. I really wanted to, but he says that was off limits and told me to stay in South Carolina.
I
wasn't allowed in, wasn't allowed in California.
Well, seriously, though, guys, thanks. You did a great job. I edited the episodes, and we got them a little out of our normal sequence of releasing on the 5th and the 20th. But I think we covered what we needed to cover, and we're back on schedule, and this will be our listener feedback episode for the month of June.
Well, you know, guys, I have to eat some crow here, so, you know, mark your calendars, you know, just don't say I told you so. I've actually found a utility called My Unity that lets you tweak Unity with a lot of different settings. It makes it much more, I'd say, yours. So after played with it, it's made me kind of like Unity now. So I'm not going to say anything else. I'm eating crow over here. So I've been running it for about 10 days, and I like it a lot. I'm still on running 1204. That My Unity is a great little application. So anybody that doesn't like Unity, try that. Load up your software center and grab that My Unity and play with it. You adjust a lot of different stuff in it.
Okay, so you add it right from the repository. You don't have to add any PPAs or any special enablement of this or that or anything?
No, you just go to the software center and you tell, look, you just type My Unity and it pops right up. You load it. It's really a small program. And the only thing you can't do is you can't move to dock, but you can make the dock smaller. You can do that without My Unity, but My Unity has it all in one place, so you don't have to dig around different settings and stuff. But you can change the default, how things open, how things close. I mean, there's so much you can do with it. So I'd say take a look at it. It made me like Unity a lot more because I shrunk that taskbar down, and now I got a lot of more stuff on it. And I showed Tom my desktop. I even showed you. And like I said, it's not bad now. I mean, I've changed a lot of stuff, so it lets you customize it.
Yeah. So, Tom, cool. Are you going with 12.04?
As soon as the warranty expires on my 10.04.
That's what, next year?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Well,
April of next year, so I got 11 months to go yet.
There you go. Well, it's a long-term support, so it'll be around for a while.
Right.
And maybe by that time, there'll be some more tweaks for Unity and all kinds of good stuff. But
well, by that time, Bill will have explored every possibility.
Yeah, the problem is he'll be exploring every possibility with other distributions.
Hey, Hey, I just want to say I stayed on PC Linux OS for about 4 months.
Yeah, well, that was impressive.
I still like PC, but I like now that I got everything tweaked and I'm not changing.
Yeah.
Not for a while until at least I get a little bored with it. I mean, geez, you know how hard I worked on that stupid script. I ain't not going to say, well, I'm done. Yeah. Let's do it again.
Yeah, no, there you go.
And I did back up, by the way.
That's good. That's good. Well, I have found that Linux Mint has released a new RC for the next version of Mint called Maya. And it's Linux Mint 13, Lucky 13. And I haven't tried it yet, but I'm hoping that they will have resolved some of the issues with Cinnamon in particular. I did yesterday try going back to Mate on my Linux Mint 12 just to see what the improvements they've made to Mate over the last little while. And it is, as they describe on the website, rock solid. It works beautifully. It is like GNOME 2 in every way, and it just works. In fact, one of the niggly little things that I had as a problem with my laptop is that when I had it connected to two screens and then disconnected the two screens and closed the lid in order to take the laptop somewhere, but left the computer running, when I opened the lid again, it would display vertical stripes, black and blue, vertical stripes.
Nice.
Yes.
Pretty.
And the only way to get out of that was to restart the computer. So what I discovered when I went back to Mate is that the problem isn't there with Mate. It works just fine. So good. I'm suspecting that it's a Cinnamon issue that they haven't resolved yet. I'm not sure how to report that as a bug, but I'll do the best I can and see if Mint 13 has the problem fixed. It's still using the same version of Cinnamon that I have here, so I don't expect so. But now that I know that Cinnamon's the problem, I can work with that.
Sure. Did you know the little trivia? The name for the Mint 13 is Clem's Daughters.
I hadn't heard that. Okay.
Yeah. Five-year support one after his daughter. That was pretty good. That was cute.
Yeah, it's good. Mm-hmm. Well, shall we get into our voicemails and emails, guys?
Yeah.
It's probably a good idea. Have you fixed your Skype problem?
My Skype problem?
Your Skype problem, it was dropping out.
Oh.
Yeah, you just stopped. You had to reconnect.
Oh. I don't know. I'm suspecting that might be a Cinnamon issue as well.
He doesn't know because he took a 2-week unannounced Hawaiian cruise.
That's true. All right, so we don't know if Skype is fixed, so we'll just take off and see if the engines fall off, right?
That's it. That's our
Put
tradition,
the bolts
right?
back in.
I'm just following in your footsteps, Tom.
Well, thank you.
Okay, our first voicemail feedback is from Bob, and he has problems with Skype in Ubuntu.
Hello, this is Bob. I just want to let you know I've had problems getting Skype to work in Ubuntu, and I just downloaded the newest version, the beta testing version for the one that's coming out, and lo and behold, I clicked on the button, and it just worked. So I can at least tell you on my own computer, which is one I built from scratch, Skype did not work, or I couldn't get it to work on the old version, and the new version, it just worked. So anyway, they are making some progress. All right, thanks, guys. Keep up the grid. Work. You're doing a terrific job. Love it.
Well, thanks, Bob. We appreciate it when someone calls in with a problem that they've already solved.
Yeah, that makes it easy for us.
Glad to hear that Skype's working for you. And our next voicemail is from Nathan, calling about our applications episode. And he likes Puppy. Let's listen to that.
Hello there. I was listening to your episode 172. This is Nathan. I was calling about the applications for different distributions, and I did hear Bill say something about CrunchBang Linux as far as what are the default applications for that one. Or it's kind of interesting to look at like Puppy Linux as far as I think it's too minimal of a distribution for them to use like LibreOffice where they use Numeric or AbbeyWord as far as some applications. Well, anyway, that's all I was calling up. Thank you very much for the show. Bye.
Thanks, Nathan. That was great information. And keep letting us know how you like Puppy. Okay, guys, our first email is from McVries. He wrote us about Solus OS. A quick note before we read this email. We got a message from Ray Woods that the Solus OS 1, I guess that's our first version, was listed on DistroWatch. So we're going to include a DistroWatch link in the show notes. Hi all, I still listen to your show with joy. Keep it up. This time, I write in with a tip for Tom, I guess. Since he sticks with the older distros because of the lesser hardware demand, I'd like to bring Solus OS your attention. It's Debian-based and comes with all apps. The big plus is it uses GNOME and has a very low memory footprint. Even with full-blown compes and extras, it only uses 140 megabytes for itself. Wow, that's excellent. Mm-hmm. It's snappy, user-friendly, and up-to-date. The great friendly form is also a plus, and the maintainer, Ike Doherty, is just plain a nice guy. Check out the site, www.solusos.com, and give it a spin. Keep up the show. Regards, McVries.
So, Tom, there's another suggestion for you.
Yep. Thanks, McVries. But the actual reason why I'm so slow in moving from one thing to the next is because I'm a big chicken. There have been a couple of times that I've set across the bridge, and halfway across, the bridge is gone. So,
yeah, it's because as you walk across a bridge, you've got a wrench in your hand, and you're undoing the bolts behind you.
I know. Hey, I never tried this before. I wonder what this does.
In all fairness, guys, I tried Solus OS. It's pretty excellent. It is based on Debian Stable and has a bunch of has all the packages are updated. It ran great on my Lenovo. I was using a live CD. So, Tom, I think it might be a good fit for you if you want to stay with the GNOME 2.
That's a very good point, and I will certainly keep that in mind next year.
Next year.
By next year, there may be some other options. Mm-hmm. Our next email is from David, who wrote about a problem with our Aug feed. Hey guys, I enjoy your Going Linux podcast and appreciate all the work that you put into making it all happen. I have been using Linux since 2001, but I still find useful information on your show. Though I'm pretty familiar with Linux and the tasks that I already do, you sometimes bring up how-to episodes on things that I have not tried to do under Linux. Keep up the great work. I subscribe to your Aug feed for the podcast, and something odd happened with episode 170. I thought I would pass it along just in case other listeners run into the same issue. I use Bash Potter to podcatch under Sabayon Linux and transferred the episode to my Cowan J3 media player as usual. When I tried to play the podcast, the audio was slowed down so much that you could not understand it. I even increased the playback speed to 150% on the J3, and it was still too slow to play it correctly. I deleted the episode and pulled it down again directly from your website, thinking the transmission had issues. Same issue. I pulled down the MP3 version as well. I received an invalid file error while I put it on the J3 in the same directory. I pulled both versions down again and verified I could play both on my Linux box. I then did a firmware update to the J3, but I still couldn't play either version. I then copied both files to an old iPod that I converted to using Rockbox firmware. Both episodes played fine. I looked at the J3 and found that there was a partial file for episode 170 in that directory on the J3, and I went in through a terminal window and deleted that file. I transferred both files to the J3 again, no change to the OGG version, but I could now play the MP3 version. I'm not sure if you did anything to change the OGG version for 170. The previous non-Computer America episode played fine. Sorry, I skipped the Computer America episode since the change in the hosts on that program and the Linux bashing by the newer co-host. I appreciate you being on that show to help people learn more about Linux. Sabion is a rolling distro based on Gentoo, which you don't have to compile programs, and you get a stable release with the latest versions of things. It could have been due to an upgrade in the OS I was using. It could have been something going bad on my J3. I'm not sure what happened, but I thought I would mention it if other listeners had similar issues, or if you had made a change to the OGG recording recently. Anyway, I just thought I would share the experience. Keep up the great work.
Wow, that is weird. I don't know what could cause something like that.
Well, I know what happened. What? Tom put the wrench away.
Yeah. Larry, didn't you write back to him?
I did. And we had made some changes in the feed. I had actually made a mistake in the feed and edited it so that it was correct and reposted the feed. But if he happened to download at during the time that the feed was bad, he might have had a problem. And it was around episode 170 that I did that. So okay. I suggested that he unsubscribe and resubscribe rather than just download a new version. And it appears that David had already solved the problem through his sure. Investigating what's going on with the J3. And that partial file, I'm sure, was the problem. And he may have downloaded that partial file as a result of the mistake I made in the feed. So apologize for that.
Well, next up, we've got an email from Don, who has a USB stick issue. Don says, "Hello, Larry, Tom, and the other guy."
Hello,
Don. He continues, "I'm using Linux Mint 12 and Mint LXDE. I just ordered a Raspberry Pi, and it uses Debian, so I wanted to try Debian 6, but I'm having problems installing. I've downloaded the ISO and have burned it to DVD. I can boot from the live CD and get to the Debian LXDE desktop. I then start the install process, but I get a message that my network card needs firmware to complete. It says that I can put the firmware on a USB stick and the Debian installer will find it. Well, here's the problem. I did find the necessary firmware, and I did place it on a FAT32 formatted USB stick in a folder named /firmware. But the Debian installer can't find the USB stick. When it gets to the section asking for firmware, I get the terms and conditions page, which I accept, but then the Debian installer keeps looping back to the page asking me to insert a USB stick. I click yes and click continue, but the page loops back to the same page asking me to insert a USB stick. For some reason, the Debian installer is not seeing the USB stick. Any help would be nice. Don." I have no idea, Don. You guys?
I do.
Go for it.
Okay.
I actually do on this one, but it's a workaround. When I've installed Debian 6 onto my Lenovo, it always asks me for the firmware, and I had originally tried something very similar to this and could never get it to work. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to install it. It was wired into my standard, I had a wired connection. So I still had connectivity. So I did the entire install. Then you go to the repositories and you enable the non-free. And then you can find the firmware for your wireless in the non-free repositories for Debian. That's how I did it, and it works so much easier than trying to get it to find the USB stick. I tried everything. I even tried a CD. I even went there. It's a pain in the butt. This is much easier. Just do the install, and if you have a wired connection, just keep it wired. Do the install. Go to your repositories in Synaptic Package Manager, enable the non-free reload it, and you will start seeing the different firmwares for the wireless. And if you know what your drivers are called, you can type it in, and it usually pops it right up. You install it, and everything just starts working. That's a workaround.
Hey, but I read an email from somebody on the last Computer America episode I was on, and that email kind of illustrates what Don is talking about here, which is that other listener wrote in saying that he tried Debian because Ubuntu that he had been using is based on Debian, and he wanted to try that out. But after using Debian for a while, he realized how much Ubuntu had spoiled him.
Well, the reason that is, Larry, is there's a difference in philosophy between Debian and Ubuntu.
Right.
Debian does not, and the initial install, supply any proprietary drivers.
Exactly.
Okay, so if it doesn't work with your machine, you're out of luck. But once you enable the other drivers, the other repositories, you can get it installed. But you're going to also understand, Debian 6 is pretty old compared to the new Ubuntu's. Ubuntu does a lot of makes things very user friendly, makes it easy to install all the drivers. I mean, you can just go. You go to Ubuntu, go to Software Center, type in restricted extras, and it installs all the codecs. You can't really argue with that. And it also, if it sees that you have a proprietary NVIDIA or ATI, the wizard pops up and says, "Hey, I can download this for you and install it. Do you want to do it?" But with Debian, there is no such thing.
Bill, quick question.
Sure.
Don's problem was that he didn't have firmware to run the network card.
Is it a network card or is it his wireless card?
It says network card.
I think he means his wireless because... No. See, it's... Well, let's see. Let's see here. Debian's up.
Firmware. If his network won't work, how can he go to the repositories?
Yeah.
I've tried installing Debian on several different machines, and the networks always work, so I'm going to take a stab against, because I always got the message about the wireless. So I don't know if he means the wireless, because it comes up, it says it'll go auto-configuring your network, and DHCP, and it finds it and moves on, and then it says, "Hey, we noticed that you have a wireless card. Do you have the firmware? Go ahead and install, and do you want to install it now?"
And you skip it, and okay, I got it.
Yeah.
It's very unusual that a Linux distribution wouldn't recognize a wired network card. You know, he is installing this on a Raspberry Pi, and we don't know much about that hardware.
If he's trying to install this on a Raspberry Pi, then he needs to go to their website, because I know they did some work with Debian. They were going to use Debian, but I think they switched to Fedora. There's a couple images that they've made that they know that works.
Right.
Because the Raspberry Pi actually uses some proprietary drivers. It's not all free. And I believe I haven't filed it recently, but I remember reading somewhere that they switched from Debian to Fedora and some others, that they're approved ISOs right away. I don't think Ubuntu has one, and Debian might have one, but I think that might be a specific image. What he could do, since that's a little, Raspberry Pi is a little USB stick, and it's not Intel based. It's a little ARM chip.
ARM.
So
yeah.
he might be having problems installing the standard Debian onto this little ARM chip. So go to the Raspberry Pi and look for the links for their special ISOs for this. That might solve his problem.
Yeah.
Now not to pick this thing apart too much, but he says, "I just ordered a Raspberry Pi and it uses Debian, so I wanted to try Debian 6. Now, to me, that means that he was trying it on a computer.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So going back to my original comment, I would be very surprised if Debian didn't pick up the hardware for a wired network card. So I suspect that Bill's right.
It's wireless.
This was a wireless issue.
Don, get back to us. Let us know so we know whether or not to put a one on the big scoreboard for a win for Bill.
Yeah.
And keep my getting my pay docked.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving right along. John has a puzzle. So he goes, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill," with a question mark.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Hi, John.
That's right. Hi, John.
Hi, John.
Hi, John. Here's one for the Ubuntu brains. Oh, boy, we're in trouble now. Just downloaded Ubuntu 12.04, fresh install, works, but no sound. I've been everywhere. I don't know where to find solutions. No fun yet. This is an exchange from one of our LUG members, and I hoped it would work. No fun. What other programs needed installed for troubleshooting? Thanks, guys. John in Dallas. And John includes this email to Preston. Hello, Preston. Thanks so much for your response. I don't have Pulse volume control installed. After I did install, I had some of your suggestions available, but not all. In the configuration tab, only available option is built-in audio, analog stereo output. As you suggest, I don't see where to set the high-definition audio controller to off. In that box, there is the option to turn off, and he asks, is that what he means? In output, there's no choice for port. It is set to dummy output. So respects in regular sound controls, sound is being seen by the OS. The orange meter is moving at the bottom of the dialog box to the voice levels being processed. I'm not just hearing anything. Thanks for any suggestions or help, John. And then Preston's response to John was, I ran into a no sound issue after upgrading from 10.04 to 12.04. In my case, the problem was my NVIDIA video card with an HDMI output. All the sound was being directed to the HDMI output instead of the 3.5 millimeter jack on my onboard sound card. To fix it, I went to Multimedia Pulse Audio Volume Control, then click on the Configuration tab, then set High Definition Audio Controller to off, and made sure the built-in audio was set to analog stereo output. You might then want to go check the Output Devices tab and make sure the port is set and it isn't muted and the volume is turned up. Mine all looked fine in Awesome Mixer and everywhere else, but I did this as well. But as soon as I disabled the other controller, sound came on right away. Hope this helps, Preston.
Yeah, and I've noticed a similar sort of thing with sound. Sometimes it's a little funky. Especially if you have more than one sound card, that sometimes it will, and of course I'm using Mint, not Ubuntu, but sometimes it will switch to a different card unannounced, different hardware device for the output on the sound, and all you have to do is go into the sound control and switch it to the right hardware, and it works just fine.
First, make sure you got your drivers.
Yeah. Going back to Don's issue, make sure you've got your drivers. So,
well, I have a suggestion that is actually it's probably simple. Depending on what laptop he has, he didn't give us any specs on what system he was trying to get this to work on. A lot of times, he said he saw the orange meter moving. Mm-hmm. So, on some computers, I've run into this issue. You actually have to use the hardware up volume buttons to get it to work.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes the hardware volume controls are independent of the software volume controls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as I found out in Mate in Linux Mint yesterday, sometimes the volume control that's on the panel is independent of the volume control in the sound preferences. So there are too many ways to control audio volume in
Right.
Modern Linux distributions, quite frankly, and they should all work simultaneously and in a coordinated fashion, but they don't. You have a lot of places to look to troubleshoot sound.
Yeah. I remember when Ubuntu first went to Pulse Audio, there were like 5 different menus.
Yeah. Well, I think it's down to 3 now, but...
I just use the one and it works fine.
Yeah, good.
But,
yeah.
You know, Ubuntu has made a lot of strides to making sure that audio works.
Yeah.
And even just to bring this back into perspective, Windows, I got said to W, sometimes will need a driver just to get their video, their sound to work. So, you know, they're backed by a multi-million dollar company and they can't even get their operating system to sometimes play nice with video. So, or audio, as a matter of fact. So, in the long run, try these simple suggestions. And if you haven't had any luck, go to the Ubuntu forums and tell them what's going on. And make sure you tell them what kind of hardware that you're running, because there's going to be someone in that runs Ubuntu that will know how to fix it. And so I'd say go to their forums and, you know, respectively say, look, I have this. I can't get this to work. This is my sound. This is what I've done. And I bet you that 9 times out of 10, they're going to find that solution for you.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Bill. The hardware, even on Windows, gives you issues. The sound and video are oftentimes requiring special drivers. In fact, years ago when I was supporting ThinkPads, when IBM actually owned the ThinkPad, I not so frequently, but once in a while had to rebuild a computer from scratch, install Windows from scratch. And anytime you did that on the ThinkPad, either the sound wouldn't work or the video wouldn't display full screen or something until you went to the IBM website and downloaded their proprietary driver for Windows, and then everything worked just fine. And, you know, most people don't know that, even with Windows, because they buy their computer with it pre-installed. So if you really don't want to have trouble with Linux, buy it from System76 or ZA Reason or one of the distributors of hardware with Linux pre-installed, and it'll be just as trouble-free as Windows is on hardware. Even more trouble-free, because you won't have viruses.
Does Dell still sell Ubuntu computers?
Not that I'm aware of. If they do, I think you have to make a special request, because I have not been able to find any sort of Ubuntu pre-installed on the Dell website for a long time.
And we said
they just started again.
Oh, did they?
Did they? Yeah, and you know, we've said Windows 3 times in this podcast, and Tom
4
is
now.
Still conscious.
Yeah.
4. So,
okay.
Yeah, guys, I'll be right back. I got to take a shower.
All right. Having said that, let's move on to our next email. Next email is from Jared, who has a problem with our podcast feed. Another one.
Oh.
Yeah. Probably a result of the same change and mistake that I made. Gentlemen, I quite enjoy your show, which is why I'm disappointed that I can't listen to the last 2 episodes on my phone. I'm not sure whether the problem is my end or yours. Here are some of the details. Phone is an LG Android 2.2. Software is Google Listen. It's the only podcast that doesn't work on my phone. It won't start. Just sits there. Google Listen isn't hanging up. If I go to another podcast, no problem. If I go to your site, I can't play it that way either. Flash problem, perhaps? I also have trouble playing it on my Linux Mint XFCE laptop from the website using Firefox. Same with LXDE. If I download the AUG or MP3 files, no problem. But I can't listen to them directly from the link on the site. It appears to play, but no sound. Older episodes play fine. Just the last 2 or 3 won't work. I'm guessing it's related, but it's not something you should worry about if I'm the only one having the problem. By the way, episode 165 was really amazing. I had no idea switching desktops was so easy. And as you can tell from my comments above, I've only been trying a few new ones. Thanks. Regards, Jared.
Thanks, Jared.
Yeah. Thanks, Jared. And your problems seem very specific. I haven't heard from other people that they have a problem playing a specific episode or a couple of episodes on a phone. Same problem on XFCE, Firefox, LXDE, all over the map. I don't know what's going on. It may have to do with the feed not being right, but especially since when you download the files directly, you can play them. So it may have been a feed issue, but I'm not sure. It's a little over all over the map here. Any ideas, guys?
Yeah. Maybe it's fixed.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully, now that I fix the feeds, it fixes things. And just a comment for people who are still experiencing problems with our feeds. Typically, when any podcast makes an edit to a previous episode on an RSS feed, on some players, they'll handle that just fine. But on other podcast players, you actually have to unsubscribe and resubscribe before it'll, register the changes in the feed. Just a note.
Yeah, I found that's how I had to fix. I used to use Google Listen until I found another podcatcher for my Android phone. And I found that there's some things would work perfectly for, 2 or 3 weeks, and then I couldn't get it to work. And so I couldn't figure out why. And I would delete it and reinstall it, and it'd work again. So, yeah, you're right, Larry, on that.
Yeah, I think there's still some work to be done on the Google Listen player.
Yeah, I think it's still, it's beta. I don't think they're actively doing it. But there's, if he needs to look around, there's some great free ones. One's called Pod. I think it's called Podcast. I can't remember because I don't have my Android phone. It's free. It doesn't have any advertisements, and it works spectacularly well. So,
yeah, I've heard people speak well of Beyond Pod. I don't know whether that's
Yeah, that's
or
a
not.
Good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one. But there's also one, I think, called Podcast. Mm-hmm. Or something very similar. Look around, and it has reviews saying it. And one of the top reviews is all say, this is a great no-nonsense, no-ad podcatcher. And I've been using it, and it works flawlessly. And it's got some nice features without any advertisements. So if you're having problems with Google Listen, and I did, that's why I found something different. Look for some of the others. Beyond Pod, I heard what was good, like Larry said.
Okay, great.
Okay, well, next up we have Gus. And Gus says, hello, Larry, Tom, and now Bill.
Hello, Gus.
Hello, Gus.
Hey, Gus.
Larry, I remember from a while back that your desktop environment of choice was KDE 3.5.
That's a while ago.
And that you moved to GNOME because you did not like the layout of KDE 4. I recently discovered a project called Trinity, which is to KDE what Mate is to GNOME. It's a fork of KDE 3.5. I thought you might want to know, so you can try it out on a virtual machine or as an alternative choice in your login. I like the Mate project and think it's great that people have built communities around abandoned projects to help those who have grown accustomed to them. That is one of the main reasons I like Linux. Now, my gone Linux story. I first used Edubuntu in my school, and while dumbfounded by the idea that there were OSs besides Windows, I never knew it was Linux. A couple years later, a classmate introduced me to Linux Mint 10, and I played around with the live CD for a while. One day, my dad's XP computer crashed, and after it sat in the basement for a few months, I decided I would install Ubuntu on it. After hopping distros every few days, I settled back on Ubuntu. When I bought my laptop, after a while of using Windows 7, I heard the call of the Free Software Foundation and installed Ubuntu. I'm still hopping and can identify with Bill's constant changing of distros. Hopefully, I can find one I like soon.
Well, oh. Gus, join the crowd. That's a great story.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
By the way, I do not change distros that often. Only Well,
keep telling us. We may believe you one day.
Okay, I'm shutting up now.
You can't. You got to read the next email.
Oh, okay. Our next email come from Paul, and he wrote Larry.
Hi, Paul.
Just heard your latest Commuter America show, and I wanted to tell you I enjoyed G Potter and Mint 11 for a long time. When I upgraded to Mint 12 and loaded G Potter from the repository, I could not get it to work, just like your listener in feedback on the Computer America show. I finally gave up trying and went to Banshee. Since you said you had not heard of another user complaints about G Potter and Mint 12, I thought I'd let you know. I couldn't recall the exact error message, but I could not get GPotter to run and select podcasts to receive. Sorry, it's late now, and I just finished painting a room, and I'm really beat, or I would try to replicate the problem again. We missed you. Hope you are well, and everything is okay with you. Thanks for the podcast.
Paul's is about the second or third email that we've received now saying that GPotter doesn't work on Mint 12. And I went back and realized I had not reinstalled it since I reinstalled Mint 12. So I got it from the repositories, installed it, subscribed to a podcast or two, and everything worked fine. So I don't know what's going on. It obviously works on my machine. That doesn't help you, but it's not a problem necessarily with Linux Mint 12. I'm not sure what to say.
I think a bug report would be in order.
Probably. It could be your specific hardware. So get on the Mint 12 or the GPotter, probably better the GPotter website, and file a report. All right. Our next email is from Bob, who back in March sent us this message. And even though it's a little old, it's still appropriate. Bob writes, "Hi, guys." Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob.
Have you heard the buzz around a new mainstream use of Linux? There's an active movement to create a cheap device that a user could plug into their flat screen TV. Just about any existing flat screen could be used to connect to a computer. This could be the hardware solution to getting Linux into popular use. Canonical is actively looking for TV manufacturers to include Ubuntu as a standard feature for their flat screens. Raspberry Pi as a low-end credit card size computer on a board running Fedora Linux or Gingerbread Android that sells for just $25 to $35. Cotton Candy is a USB thumb drive sized dual-core computer that comes with Ubuntu for $199. Imagine if every TV simply came with Ubuntu as a standard feature. What if it only cost $35 to upgrade your current flat-screen TV to a computer running Fedora? What if you could buy a thumb drive-sized device that instantly turned your home's TV into a media streaming, game-playing, Facebooking Googler? I believe that it is possible that someday people might be saying, "Remember Windows? Remember Mac? Why did we pay for an operating system?" Love your podcast, Bob. And Bob includes links to PC World articles on a lot of this, and a post on Ubuntu.com will include those in the show notes.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bob.
By the way, I saw an announcement somewhere. I think it's 10% of computers shipping this year will ship with Linux.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I just watched a video from, I think it might have been this UDS, that's the Ubuntu Developers Conference, or was it, what's that big show every year they do with all the manufacturers, you know, for TVs and stuff? It's Comdex, what is it called?
Yeah, it used to be called Comdex, I think. Computer Electronics Show, CES.
Yeah, CES, that's it. They at CES, Ubuntu had their TV set up, and they had a video of it, and that's slick. It was really, really slick. It uses you just have to watch it, but it's very intuitive. And so that was just their early attempts. So I'd like to see what they're going to be doing in the future. But yeah, Linux, believe it or not, runs a lot of TVs now as the firmware, and it just makes it work. And a lot of times, no one knows it's there.
Yep, exactly.
Well, not only TVs, but just about it's probably refrigerators.
Well, when you don't have to pay you have to have something to regulate your refrigerators and toasters and
sure.
And cars and you know, just about anything. So I mean, if you don't have to pay for it and you can use it and change it freely, Linux fits the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. The new Samsung refrigerators, mm-hmm. they have a flat panel device on the front. Looks exactly like a 7-inch Samsung Galaxy Tab, which of course runs Android Linux. Right?
Really?
Yeah.
That's
I wouldn't be surprised if they're using exactly the same hardware right there on the refrigerator.
Sure.
Can it make calls?
I don't know. I don't see any interface to plug in a phone or a network, but that's probably the wireless thing that they haven't turned on yet.
Yeah, but that'd be cool, though.
It would be.
Okay.
Actually, right now I'm talking to you on my electric toothbrush.
Okay.
Okay, so next up we have Ian, and Ian wrote, "Hi, Larry, Tom, and Bill."
Hi, Ian.
Listening to your latest show, number 166, Computer America, Larry is talking about GPotter, which I've used for a number of years, and mentions BotSync to connect it with an Android phone wirelessly. He says that an SSH connection needs to be set up on the computer and that this is easy to do and instructions are given. It goes straight into a config screen on the phone as shown on the BotSync website. Can you please help me setting up SSH in BotSync? Oh, I'm running Linux Mint Debian XFCE edition. Regards, Ian.
Okay, well, the SSH that you need to set up on your XFCE Linux Mint computer, if you go to the software manager and type in SSH, SSH isn't installed, the SSH daemon isn't installed automatically on Linux Mint or by default. Just search for SSH and install the package called OpenSSH-Server. And that, once it's installed, you go to a terminal and type in SSH, or is this a SSHD? I forget. You type one of those in, one of those will fail and the other will work. And what that'll do is it'll start the SSH daemon running, and now you can actually do the connection. That you've just installed SSH and got it running, so there's nothing further to do. It'll just keep on running for you.
Excellent.
So there are your instructions.
Okay.
Well, I'll have to write those down because, man, I wouldn't have known what to do either.
Okay. I think it's actually somewhere on the BotSync site that it describes that, but that I just did from memory.
Okay. Okay, our next email comes from Vega, who's writing from Costa Rica. And he goes, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Vega.
Hi, Vega.
Hi, Vega. "I've been listening to your podcast for around 15 episodes, and I think it's great. This is one of my favorite Linux ones. I do love Linux. My favorite distro is Fedora because my job is a tech support for a famous world company. I cover the Linux side, mostly support in Red Hat Enterprise Linux and SUSE Enterprise Linux. Anyways, I am right now trying OpenSUSE 12.1 because I wanted to get more familiar with Yast, a darn good tool. But I have faced several issues with my video card, an ATI Radeon HD 4350. My monitor is hooked up via HDMI, and the video I display in YouTube or any other source, when I do full screen, it freezes, but audio continues. This is just one among several different issues I've tried with the inbox driver. AMD driver and Radeon driver, one of these, do not remember which one of the GNOME 3 interfaces, does not even load because of the driver. If I try Ubuntu 11.10 or Mint 12, everything works smoothly. In Ubuntu, the inbox driver in Mint, I had to do my research to install the right driver, but after that, no issues. So bottom line, have you ever heard issues with OpenSUSE with video cards like this or a previous experience of you guys? Everybody can help with opinions. P.S. OpenSUSE, not my favorite distro at all. Thanks a lot. Nice show. You rock.
Yes, we do.
And the ATI drivers are notoriously, especially the proprietary drivers, are notoriously unreliable on Linux, period.
They're very immature.
Yes,
very
exactly. Immature. So you're better off sticking with the free drivers, the open source drivers, if you can. And if the ATI driver works for you, go ahead and use it. If it doesn't, you're going to have to use one of the open source drivers.
Yeah, and you're not the only one that has problems in OpenSUSE with some video issues. And actually, all other distros have problems too. I just think that Mint and Ubuntu might have taken a little extra work on those because I don't quite hear as many complaints. But OpenSUSE is a fine distro. It's just not my cup of tea. I've tried it. But like I said, the drivers are very immature. And so I don't know if you had a chance, but if you ever buy another computer, make sure that the drivers are, you know, supported in Linux kernel. And you know what? It wouldn't hurt to send a bug report.
You bet.
There you go.
And at the last minute, a final contribution by voice recording from Nightwise.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Tom and their minion army of one, Bill. Hello, Bill. How are your troops? This is Nightwise calling from Nightwise.com. And I was calling in with a little question. I'm working on a project currently of doing, once again, the unthinkable, installing Linux on a Mac. Now, normally, I'm kind of the go-to guy when it comes to this subject, but I do have a question. The Mac that I've purchased is a G4 PowerPC Macintosh, which means it's quite an old machine. I think it's about 6 or 7 years old. It's an 800 megahertz processor with 768 megs of RAM. Not really a, you know, a heavy lifter. Not something you want to render the next Avatar movie on or something. And also not something you want to use to run the latest version of OS X that's supported. That's 10.05, name of the big cat, Tiger, on that because, well, it's not really secure to go online with an unsupported OS. Linux to the rescue, as usual. And I was surprised to find a lot of PowerPC distributions out there. I mean, every major distro has a PowerPC fork, which allows you to install it on this older hardware. But I have a little bit of a question. If I were to install the latest and greatest, let's say 1204 with Unity or Mint 13, if it's ever ported, on that machine, it would surely make the nuclear plant at Fukushima look like, I don't know, a little incident. I think the iMac would melt down, and it would melt a hole in the planet and emerge somewhere in Australia, and there would be very surprised people looking at what's the bottom of the iMac doing here in Australia. So running the latest and greatest on a light CPU like that is probably not a good idea. So I thought, why not take an older version of Linux? Because it's lighter, right? What's your stance on this? Would you say that you prefer using more recent versions of Linux on older hardware, but using a very light skin like LXDE or XFCE? Or do you say, no, let's just go back to Ubuntu 5.04 and slap that on it, because that is more fitting for old machines? What's actually the best stand to take when using Linux on older hardware? Do you take the distribution that was created at the time that the hardware was built? Or do you take the latest and greatest distribution but try to lighten it down or narrow it down or strip it down to its lightest components using, for example, only a command line interface or a very light graphical desktop? This doesn't only fly for PowerPC Mac, but for any system that is older. The question being, what do you put on old hardware? Do you put the older versions of Linux on them, or the most recent ones that you have lightened with very light graphical shells, or basically just a command line? Love to hear from you guys. Thank you. Keep up the good work. And if you have any cross-platform slider questions for people who want to use Windows, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android, or whatever, come on down to the Nightwise.com podcast where we tune that tech into your way of life. Bye, guys.
Hello, Nightwise. Responding to your message recently about installing Linux on an older Macintosh computer. A quick correction first. Bill is not our only minion. He is but the chief executive of our vast minion army of listeners. Hundreds of thousands. Yes, that's it. Of minions. I suppose if you include the electrons that make the technology possible, we actually have millions, hundreds of millions of tiny electronic minions as well. Thanks for the voicemail. We have actually just completed the recording of our next listener feedback episode, but your question is so important that I wanted to insert it and our answers into that episode. This, of course, has made our team exclaim, "Activate the minions," causing them to mobilize and to help us to insert the audio into the half-edited episode that we already have recorded. Our little experiment will involve the three hosts individually recording the responses to your message, this being one of those recordings, the minions delivering them via the magic of Dropbox to my computer, where I will dutifully edit the audio files into a seamless and single response to your eloquently formed question. Here are Tom's thoughts on your question.
Well, I don't have any experience at all with putting Linux on a Macintosh, so I can't speak to that. A couple of points, though. You said something like, older is lighter as far as distributions are concerned. That might not be the case. When they update the kernel, when they work on that, they're constantly working on memory management, time management, file management, that sort of thing. So it might actually be lighter and more efficient as it evolves. And then the other thing is, whatever you choose, you can always turn off the things that you don't need. Go into the services. If you don't have a printer, turn off the service. If you don't have Bluetooth, and et cetera, and et cetera. And that should lighten your load up a little bit. And that's about all I can think of to say. Good luck with it, Nightwise, and let us know what you come up with.
Hey, Nightwise, this is the Chief Executive Minion Bill, and I've got the answer for you. I wouldn't install an older distro that's no longer supported because security is so important and you'll have a compromised system. But I found your answer. It's called Debian. Debian is usually lighter than Ubuntu by a lot. And they have a PowerPC port right now that is very well supported and gets all the security updates. So why don't you look into that? If you run that PowerPC port of Debian and then pick a light desktop, I believe you have a screaming machine. Well, let me get back to my army. They're calling and it's time to eat. So good luck with the project, Nightwise. Bye.
Here are my thoughts on the questions you posed. If you truly have a choice, always, always, always choose a lightweight recent distribution over an unsupported older one. If you install a release that is from the last century so that it matches the vintage of your iMac, the Linux kernel and the applications will be missing the latest security patches. That can put your installation on older hardware in serious risk of being successfully attacked by a vintage exploit. Installing a super lightweight distribution with a more recent and well-supported kernel, you can also have your choice of lightweight and supported window managers, browsers, file managers, and other applications to suit your taste. Of course, to make your installation as lightweight as possible, you may also want to uninstall the applications that came with the distribution, but that you don't need. It is possible, I suppose, that you might not find a recent distribution that works and that you will have to use an older release. with a number of Linux distributions and the number of varieties of the ways they're packaged together, I'm sure you will find a recent release that works for you. This, of course, will take some tinkering to find out just the right combination of distribution, release, and applications to fit your particular situation. I know you're up to the task. Please let us know what you finally decide on and what actually works for you. I'd like to share your end result with our listeners. I'm sure there are some of them that want to do just what you're doing. If your experiment ends up as a Nightcast episode, we'll include a link to it from our show notes as well. Thanks again for the feedback, Nightwise, and I hope this has been helpful for you. Okay, I think that's it for our emails, guys.
We had a lot of emails.
We did.
Yeah.
And I actually have a software pick this time.
Oh, I do cool. too.
Ah, good. My software pick is wine.
Oh, wine?
Sure, why not? Wine, I've run across its benefits lately. I've had a couple of software applications that I had to use that are not available in Linux, and I tried them in Wine, and it just worked wonderfully. You know, some things work great in Wine, some things don't, but recently, I've been very happy with it, so I thought I would make it my software pick for this
episode. So how do you get into the bottles? It's California wine?
Yeah, it's California Riesling, and
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And I believe that my software pick is going to be the same as Bill's, so go ahead, Bill.
Okay. My software pick, since I've been playing with it, is Conky. If anybody doesn't know what Conky is, just type Conky into Google, and you'll see some really cool desktop, I'll call widgets for no better term, but you can do a lot of crazy stuff with Conky to really make your Linux desktops pop.
Yeah, so and if you're a KDE user, Conky is not spelled with a K at the beginning. It's C-O-N-K-Y.
Yes, it's not a K, it's C.
Yeah, and it's a utility program that allows you to put system monitors and all kinds of cool stuff on your desktop and let it sit there. And
I've actually seen one that someone took way too much time and made it look like the input on the Star Trek, you know, on their pads you see.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've seen that as well.
Yeah, makes it, and he has all the colors. I'm like, wow, that is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it looked really great.
It looks cool, yeah.
Yeah, and you're like, wow, that's cool.
So that's it for our episode this time around. Our next episode is Linux Applications, the Advanced episode.
Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations. Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use our forums to leave your topic suggestion in a thread labeled Topic Suggestions at forums.goinglinux.com.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show.
And that email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. Our voicemail is +1 904 468 7889.
Follow our show updates on Twitter and Adelica. We're Going Linux.
You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the HTML5 or the Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
73s.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.